A reading by Angela Herrera, titled The Bath. This is what 100 years look like. A rounded, wrinkled back, sparkling, wet, and soapy above the shower bench. And my hand, having gently formed in your 70th year, and emerged with lifelines bent toward blessing, scrubbing circles across your soft white skin. I drag the cloth beneath your arms, silently blessing each bend and crease of breast and belly, whose curves were determined in the womb of my great-great-grandmother. When you are dry and warm, 100 mantras of gratitude sweep over my heart that I am the one standing in the frosted light, rubbing wisps of fragrant talcum into each sweet fold. Tomorrow I return to Halifax, and you'll keep on in your chair by the picture window, looking down at Toronto. You are too old to tell your stories now, and have all but ceased speaking. Your thank you honeys are like gems at a silent retreat. But those stories have become me, the lifelines that led to my lifelines. And your name was mine long before I was dreamed and was born. For now, there's no reason to talk. I adorn you with perfume and color, powder, lipstick, rouge. We get out the pearls. Looking down at your toenails with a fresh coat of glittery red, you erupt in laughter. Will you have to take it off? All day, I kiss you as often as I can without making you suspicious that I'm saying goodbye, knowing that when you're gone, I will rise a generation. And as storylines are lifelines, I too shall pass them on.
I reflect a lot on what my role is as minister of a congregation. And one of the important things that I think I should be doing and I try to do is to enhance our awareness and our appreciation for the amazing gift of life that we share. In that story, the simple bath becomes a sacrament. The reading wasn't shown in the order of service because I decided to include it just last night. And I called Margaret. Kind of late. And you may have noticed that I took some liberties using Toronto and Halifax as a location rather than the original Boston and Seattle. But it's a universal story. The tender story gives us one perspective on compassion and motherhood. Not everyone here has had or will have the opportunity to be with their mothers in their old age. But those who have will be able to identify with the compassion felt for our mothers as they near the end of their lives. It can be, as it is in this story by Reverend Angela Herrera, a beautiful thing. The story is poignant because the mother and daughter are living thousands of miles apart, and their time together is therefore limited. It's an increasingly common situation in our mobile society. And again, geographical separation is one of the many things that we have to struggle with. But the relationship with an aging mother is only one perspective on motherhood. We're blessed to have children and youth in our congregation that give us the perspective of the relationship between mother and child at the other end of the age spectrum. When the parent is the one giving the bath to the child, or the child is the one making coffee for the first time. Our theme for May is compassion. And motherhood and compassion are inextricably linked. Last week I quoted the Charter of Compassion as promoted by Karen Armstrong. The Charter says that true compassion requires that we dethrone ourselves from the center of the world and put others there. That phrase describes the archetype of motherhood. The child becomes the center of a mother's world, and the mother lives for the benefit of the child. The image of the mother comforting a child that's on the front of the order of service today is not inherently religious. But for many, it'll call up the image of Mary and Jesus. The Roman Catholic Christian Church places the mother of Jesus on a very high pedestal. The Unitarian Universalist theologians emphasize the humanity of Jesus. And I think we can agree with Roman Catholics that an amazing young man, like Jesus, must have had an amazing mother. I want to digress here just a little bit. So when I was thinking about this sermon on Mother's Day, for a while I allowed myself to go off on a bit of a tangent, exploring the relationship between the Church and Mary. Mary is elevated to such a high pedestal that the Roman Catholic doctrine, officially amended in 1854, says that Mary, although conceived and born in the usual way, was protected by God in the womb and was without sin. Was born without sin. That's a strange idea for a lot of Unitarian Universalists to think about. But exploring this could have led to an entirely different sermon. It would have been a sermon about Freudian insight into the conflict between our sex drive and our love for our mothers. But I decided in the end that you didn't want that kind of a sermon on Mother's Day. Maybe Mother's Day. But the image of a sinless Mary, mother of Jesus, set a standard that is unrealistic and problematic for those of us in the real world. Mother's Day didn't start out as a modeling celebration of some perfect image of motherhood. It was the brainchild of some very brave and outspoken women in the 19th century. Motherhood may be the greatest miracle in our lives, but like with all other miracles, we become jaded and we take it for granted. Men in particular should live in awe, in absolute awe of motherhood. That a child would grow from a single cell within a mother's body over a period of 9 months before the uncertainty and the trauma and the pain of giving birth. And that's just the beginning of the role of a mother in nursing and raising and training a child. At the time that Mother's Day was instituted, large families and high infant mortality were the norm. Anna Jarvis, I'll explain in a minute, is credited now with starting Mother's Day, was the ninth of 11 children. Seven of her siblings died in early childhood or infancy. She decided she needed to honor her mother. No wonder. And so it comes as no surprise that Mother's Day was not instituted by a man, although it should have been, in recognition of the miraculous role of women. Unitarian Universalists proudly point to Julia Ward Howe, the Unitarian advocate for the abolition of slavery and the advancement of women's rights. In 1870, Julia Ward Howe proclaimed a Mother's Day of peace, but unfortunately it never really caught on. And it wasn't until 1907 that Anna Jarvis, of the Methodist persuasion, began lobbying for a day to celebrate all mothers. It was officially recognized by the government of the United States in 1914 and adopted in Canada shortly thereafter. Interestingly, Anna Jarvis ended up opposing the holiday that she had created because of its commercialization. I dare say it's commercialization by men, primarily. She's quoted as saying, "A printed card means nothing except that you're too lazy to write the woman who has done more for you than anyone in the world." And candy. You take a box to mother and then you eat most of it yourself. Pretty funny. Julie Ward Howe and Anna Jarvis were both pragmatists about Mother's Day, working to ease the lot of women in the world. And in the 19th century, it was even more difficult than it is today. They were working to get the kind of support that mothers needed to raise their children, and in a healthy way. So among the chocolates and the flowers and the Hallmark cards, we should never lose sight of the reality of motherhood. The Unitarian Universalist minister Jane Repka has written a short meditation called Humanizing Mom. and I want to share it with you on this Mother's Day. Reverend Rebke wrote, "On Mother's Day, one expects to read about the wonder and the glory of motherhood. Well, I can tell you from personal experience that we mothers like to be appreciated. I can also tell you that a rosy and sentimental Mother's Day column always refers to mothers in some other family. The picture painted there is not me, not my mom, not my grandmother's. In my family, mothers do not suffer any more than other mortals, nor are we particularly unsung. We complain when we trip over shoes in the living room floor, and we expect a little praise for carrying the daily grand accumulation at the bottom of the stairs, up the aforementioned stairs. We do not deserve or expect devotion from our children. We wanted to have children. It was our idea. And if they come around from time to time when they are grown-ups, we are ever so glad. But if they live their lives as secure and independent souls, we value that. Motherhood in my family is not always the most important job in the world. Some of us are actually good at it. Some of us shuffle along and do our best. And a few are better off in other professions. We try to face that. Mother's Day is no time to romanticize parenthood. Parenting is a down-to-earth process, if ever there was one. So this Mother's Day, let's humanize mom. Thank her for doing what she could, given all the dirty socks. Thank her for loving you as well as she was able, in spite of the 3 years in junior high. And then, let her thank you for the privilege of being your mother. Here ends the reading. So Reverend Rebke takes mothers down a little from the pedestal of our commercialization of Mother's Day. But on this day, it's important to recognize the ever-widening spectrum of perspectives present among us. If your relationship with your mother was one of abuse or neglect, if you were abandoned physically or emotionally as a child, if you survived into adulthood despite your mother, Mother's Day, in those circumstances, can strike you as a painful charade. For some of you, your mother may have died when you were young and vulnerable. For others, you may be grieving over the recent death of a parent. For others, like the person in the reading, the bath, you may know that you are on the brink of a loss. Mother's Day is not always a day of celebration. There are no Mother's Day cards for mothers who gave up their children for adoption or who made the painful choice to end a pregnancy. No cards for women who desperately wanted to bear a child but cannot. No cards for women who, for whatever reason, could not sustain a relationship with their children. As Unitarian Universalists, we covenant and affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person just as they are, recognizing that our perspectives on motherhood cover a very broad spectrum. We can still look to the idealized model of motherhood, that ability of mother to put the child at the center of the universe, ahead of her own needs, the ability to truly love. Truly love by extending herself for the growth and nurture of another human being. My definition of love. This is the image of motherhood and the perspective on compassion that I hope you'll take away with you this morning. And the image that I hope you'll incorporate into your life. For all children are our children. And all children deserve that selfless, nurturing love and support. I'd like to make a tradition of ending my Mother's Day sermon by recognizing the best mother that I know. The mother of my own two daughters. My wife, Janet. I remain in awe of the powers of a mother and offer my profound gratitude. The experience of a lifetime is mysterious, and it's magnificent beyond words. It began for each of us in the nurturing womb of our mothers. And may we always remain grounded in the knowledge of that miracle and the incredible gift of life that we've been given by and through our mothers. And as we live that gift, may we make our mothers proud. May it be so. Amen.